God is good
all the time.
All the time.
He's being good to us today, isn't he? Just wanted to mention at the end of our service today, I guess we'll do this just after the invitation hymn. Jack is going to talk to us for a few minutes about the camp, and so we're inviting you to please stay and be with us, and then we'll have our closing prayer. But we'll have a few minutes here at the end for our just an update on the camp, what's happening at Fort Hill Christian Youth Camp. And I look out there and I see a few shirts here and there, but I think most of the shirts went back that way a few minutes ago. I don't know, us adults don't get into those shirts quite quite the way the kids do. Well, going back over several weeks, we've been talking about things that are found in the book of Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4, 5, and 6, about the walk that is worthy of our calling. And I've explained this many times. I don't feel like I need to go into it again. You probably have been here to kind of hear this introduction. But we, over the last couple weeks, the last two times I spoke, we've been talking about husbands and wives. And actually, chapter 5 and verse 21 is the beginning of a longer section that the apostle has that deals with just family relationships, because it starts in 5:21 and actually goes all the way through chapter 6 and verse 9. I think those slaves that he's talking about in chapter 6 and verse 5 are probably, for the most part, household slaves and a part of the family unit that existed at that time. But we've finished up with the husbands and wives, and we're now down to chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. We had those scriptures read for us this morning. And what this part of the book of Ephesians tells me is that God is intensely interested in family life. He wants it to be good. He wants it to be right. And he has done he's done what he can to provide a way for us to have the right kind of family life. In addition to all the general teachings that the Lord gives us about relationships, he has taken the time here in the book of Ephesians to give us some specific teachings that deal directly with husbands and wives. And then we come to children and parents. That's the next thing that's on the agenda here. And what we learn here is that the walk that is worthy of our calling, it requires a family that is worthy of our calling. Family relationships that are worthy of our calling. And so this is all part of this section where Paul is saying, you know, since you've received all these wonderful things from the Lord, how should you be living? What should your walk be like? And part of the walk that is worthy of our calling is a walk where we've got the relationships within our family right. And we're talking about children and parents here today. Now we're going to look at Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. I'm going to read that again to you. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. This is where the apostle says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord." All we're going to do is just kind of break these verses down. We'll move through these very quickly. I want to save Jack a little bit of time here to talk to us about the camp. But let's start with chapter 6 and verse 1. Children. Children. Who are children? What are children? And I thought I might ought to spend a little bit of time just saying a few words here. I'm thinking generally of people from ages 3 to 18. I know that people that are 15, 16, 17, 18 years old don't like to be called children and don't think of themselves as children, but in our society and by our law, you're still a minor, the same as a 3-year-old would be. But I have to admit also there's a huge difference between a 3-year-old and an 18-year-old. But I'm going to be talking to children this morning, and I've got some good news and some bad news for kids this morning. The good news is this is the only verse in the Bible where God talks to you directly and gives you something to do. The bad news is he's put someone in charge of you and you have to listen to him. And so there's some good news and some bad news here. But I just want to talk to children for a little while this morning here. These first three verses basically revolve around children. I'll let you adults, you can listen in, you can kind of say amen every now and then if you want to, but basically... And about half my crowd went out the back here. I probably should have kept them in here today. But I just want to talk to children for a while. And how many of you are in here in that 3 to 18 category? I'd just be interested. If you put your hand up, I want to see how many people I've got to talk to. All right, it's worth the time. We'll go ahead. You adults just kind of listen in, and it'll be all right. But I think, isn't this great? You've only got one verse in the Bible you've got to concentrate on, but you need to pay really close attention. You only got one verse, and you got to get this one right. You could end up like Adam and Eve. They only had one thing they weren't supposed to do, and they messed it up, and it had huge consequences. I'm going to tell you, this verse has huge consequences for you if you're a child. But I just want to say this. This is all given in the context of a Christian church. This is the church at Ephesus. The people he's writing to here are, they're, no doubt, they are Christian parents. And these are the children of those parents. And all I want to say is, if you are sitting in this auditorium this morning, and you're sitting alongside your parents, I guarantee you that this verse is for you. And that this verse has huge implications for your life, for your success, for your happiness, for your safety. Just an awful lot depends on what you do with this verse. Because if you don't pay attention to what this verse says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, there are some consequences that come. If you're one of those kids that likes to sneak around behind your parents and kind of conveniently forget to tell them the things that they really want to know and should know, or ignore what they're telling you, I can tell you, you're in for trouble. First of all, you're going against God, and that's never a good idea. This verse right here is not one, your parents didn't write this verse. God wrote this verse. This is God's idea. And you can't be fighting with your parents and be okay with God. That's just the way it is. I think those of you in that 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old category need to keep that in mind. You can't be fighting with your parents and be okay with God. You might call yourself a Christian. Maybe you've been baptized. Maybe you come to church and do all that. But you're fighting with your parents. You can't be right with God, because God is the one who said for you to obey your parents. God picked your mom and dad for you. He picked you for your mom and dad. And he's been very clear about who is in charge, about who's to give the orders and who is to obey. And so you're going against God. That's going to be trouble for you. It's going to be trouble for you, too, because you're going against your parents. I don't think it's too smart to go against the people who love you and care for you most in this world. That just doesn't make sense to me. And it can mean trouble for you, too, because you're going against yourself. You might not think so right now, but I can almost guarantee you that 10 years down the way, or a few years down the way, you're going to look back on this time and say, what was that all about? Why was I so upset? Why was I so angry and so mad at my folks and my parents all the time? And you're going to understand at some point in the future that what they were doing and what this was all about was really about you. And so you're going against yourself. And so what you do with this verse has huge implications for your life. And when you go against God's teaching here, it spells trouble. But when you listen and obey, you're going to find this out in verses 2 and 3. Things just kind of go smoother in life. And there are some huge benefits to learning what this verse means. But the apostle says in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, he says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now, there is a limit to what your parents can tell you to do. They can't tell you to do just anything and everything they want to. They can't take you into Walmart and say, now here, just tuck this thing in your pants and walk out with it and don't pay for it. They can't tell you to do that. They can't tell you, now, when so-and-so asks you this question, I know this is what happened, but you tell them this. Your parents can't tell you to do that. Your parents are not allowed to tell you anything that's contrary to the will of God. They're not allowed to do those things and say those things, and they're not allowed to tell you to do those things and say those things. But I really doubt that that's going to be a problem here in our crowd here this morning. I doubt there'll ever be a problem like that. 99.999999% of the time, your parents are going to tell you exactly what God wants them to tell you. And so you need to listen. He says also in chapter 6 and verse 1, he says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is right. Why is it right? First of all, because God is the one who's saying it. He's never been wrong about anything. It's right because God said it. He's the one that made us. I mean, think about this. He's the one that made us. He knows us like a creator would know us. He knows us so well. He knows every child in this room. He knows every parent in this room. He knows every one of us better than we know ourselves. And in the God who knows everything and who made everything, you know what he says? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Some of you not need to get a tape for this so you can play it to your kids when they get out of children's Bible time. I know that I see some of you back here wishing you had done that. But this is right because God is the one who's saying it. This is right because of all people. No one loves you more than your parents. They're the perfect people to be in charge of you. They work all the time for you. They go to bed late and get up early, usually trying to get things ready for you, either before you get up in the morning or to get up early and take care of it then. And they take care of your breakfast, to lay out your clothes, to make sure you got your books. They get you to soccer practice, basketball practice, scouts, 4-H band, youth group. They make sure you got your homework, that you do it, and then that you carry it with you to school. They pay the bills, they cook, they clean, they wash, they drive. They're your taxi service. They're all of these things for you. They're just really busy taking care of you. They're the ones that make sure that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny show up at your house when he's supposed to show up. If anyone in this world deserves your cooperation, they do. And so it's right because of all the people in this world who know you, they love you more than all of those people. And it's right because it's right for you. I have never heard any person, young or old, say, you know, I got in trouble because my parents told me to do the wrong thing. Just never heard that. But I have heard a few people say, if I had only listened to my mom and dad, I wouldn't be in this trouble right now. So it's right because it's right for you. Then he says in chapter 6 and verse 1, in the middle part of that verse, he says, children, obey your parents. Obey your parents. And I guess I underlined the wrong part there, didn't I? Obey your parents. What does it mean to obey? I could go a lot of directions with this, but the biggest issue that I had with my own kids, and I think this is probably the struggle that most parents or a lot of parents have with their children, is this, is what I'll call passive disobedience. It's not that they ever just rear up and say, I'm not going to do that. You can't make me do that. And we're going to have it out right here. That's not, generally not the way kids operate. It's kind of like pushing a rope. You know where you want it to go, and they know where you want to go, but it's kind of like pushing a rope, and it just doesn't work. It's kind of a passive disobedience, just kind of laying there and saying, well, let's see if you can make me do it. It comes out in a lot of different ways. I know you've all had this experience. Bill, Jim, John, Judy, whatever. It's time to clean up your room. Can I do it later? And we'll say, no, I don't want to do it. But just can I do it later? Or I'll get to it in a minute. And all of us parents understand that the translation of that thing is, we know what you mean when you say later in a minute. What you really mean is, we're going to wait around long enough to see if they just forget about it, hopefully forever. We'll never have to do it. And I learned a little trick from a good friend of mine in Michigan. She was the principal of the school where I was involved. And I saw her do this with her son one time. And I thought, wow, I'm going to try that with my own kids. But she told him to do such and such. And he said, hey, can I take care of it later? She said, yeah, you can do it later, but tell me what time. Just tell me what time. If you say 7 o'clock, I'm going to come by around 7:05 and see if you're actually doing it. If you tell me you're going to get you'll clean your room up before you go to bed tonight, to clean your room up, just tell me what time you're going to start. So if I come around 15 minutes after that time, I'll see you in there cleaning up your room. And so she just kind of put it right back. Okay, you want to do it later? Just tell me what time. That's fine. Sometimes I think that's a good strategy, and I'm sorry I'm telling your parents that. Now you're going to... Life is going to get a little harder for you because you have to tell them the time now. But how many times, children, do you think parents have to tell you something before you actually do it? How many times should your parents have to tell you something before you actually do it? Once, right? That's the way it should be. So why do you make them tell you 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 14 times before you go to bed? Or before you actually start on your homework, or before you get up, or before you clean your room, or before you finally go and take your bath? Why don't you shock your parents this week? Just try this as an experiment this week. Just shock your parents this week, and every time that they tell you to do something, the very first time you go do it, I'm telling you, they will just faint dead away. They will be in shock. They'll be coming in here next Sunday just kind of all disoriented, confused. What happened to our world? We don't know what happened. Why don't you try that and see what happens? That would be obedience. And then we come to verses 2 and 3, and these also are for kids. Originally, they were for kids 3,500 years ago. This is the Apostle Paul is quoting the fifth commandment of the Ten Commandments. We're going back 3,500 years, and I don't want you children now living here in the year 2011 sitting in a Christian church, a church of Christ, thinking that God was picking on you and you alone. Actually, this goes back 3,500 years. God started. He started with the children and the families of Israel when he gave the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. This is the first, and as Paul says in parentheses, this is the first commandment with a promise. Goes back 3,500 years. If you just boil that down, he's saying basically the same thing. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Honor your father and mother. Basically the same thing. It's a little different. But I'm saying this goes way back. And Paul says this is the first commandment with a promise. Not only is it the first commandment with a promise, this is the only commandment with a specific promise attached to it. And what is the promise? The promise is so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Paul goes ahead and quotes that part of the fifth commandment. So that it may be well with you and that you may live long. And why honor your father and mother? Well, so things will go smooth. Honor your father and mother so that you can live a long and fruitful and happy life. That's a promise that's attached to that commandment. Honor your father and mother. Or we could attach it to the first one there, children. Obey your parents in the Lord. Same difference. That's why Paul is quoting it here. He wants you to get that idea. What does obeying your parents have to do with a good life? What does obeying your parents have to do with a long life? Well, learning obedience as a child is the foundation of being self-controlled as an adult. And you have no idea how important self-control is right now. But it's going to be very, 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 it's already important. And it's going to get more important as you get older. Let me say it again. Learning obedience as a child is the foundation of being self-controlled as an adult. Now, this is kind of like riding a bike. It's the best way that I can explain this. Let's talk about the obedience phase. You all have had the experience of having to learn to ride a bike. And probably your dad or your mom or your big brother or someone got out there and they put you up on that bike, and they held onto the seat and back, and they run along behind you or beside of you or whatever, and they let you pedal and kind of get the feel of what it was like to be on the bike. But they held you up. You were under their control. You were able to stand up or be up on that bike and stay upright and keep going in the right direction and pedal and do, and, you know, for all practical purposes, you couldn't see them. You were just moving right along. You were having a wonderful time riding your bike. And then comes that moment when they turn loose. And sometimes you don't even know that they turn loose. And what you were doing before because they were holding you up, suddenly you're doing by yourself because they held you up long enough that you finally got the idea of it. That's kind of what it's like with obedience and self-control. Those two things are very closely related. Obedience is when I have to be under someone else's control. Self-control is when I've learned to take care of myself and I'm on my bike by myself and I'm riding down the path and I'm doing it the way the Lord wants me to. Well, you don't start off knowing anything about obedience or self-control. Mom and dad have to teach you what is right and how to do it. They have to control you because you don't have self-control yet. But they're looking forward to the day when they don't have to hold you up anymore or teach you to obey. They're looking forward to the day they can let go of the seat and you're able to make yourself obey. You have this thing called self-control. Here's my point. People who have self-control get along just fine in life. Generally speaking, people who have self-control get along very well in life. And self-control helps you have a good life and a long life. Obedience is the first lesson you have to learn to get self-control, and self-control helps you have a good life and a long life. Let's look at chapter 6 and verse 4. This is where we quit talking to the kids, and we're going to talk to the fathers for just a few minutes here. This is where the Apostle Paul shifts. He says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, there's something that's missing here. And this has always bothered me. And I think I know why it's missing. Do you see what's missing here? Why is God singling out fathers and not saying a single word to the mothers? What is this about? I'm a little bit, I don't understand this. And I've kind of thought about this. Why does God have a command for the fathers but nothing for the mothers? What, is the mothers just so good at this they don't need someone to tell them what to do or how to do it? And, I've kind of thought, and this is just my little secret opinion, but it's not going to be a secret anymore. I kind of think mothers are hardwired by God to be mothers and to do the things that mothers need to do to take care of their children. I think they just kind of do this by instinct, for the most part. But I don't think fathers are wired that way. I think they have to work at it. I think they have to be taught it. I think they have to make conscious decisions to be a good father. And so, voila, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So there comes a command. I've got a few more things to say about this before we get done with this. But look at this. There are two commands here in chapter 6 and verse 4. He says, first of all, do not provoke your children to anger. No father wants his kids to be mad at him. I know even bad fathers don't want their kids to be mad at. But no kid wants to be told no, and no kid wants to be disciplined for things they do that are wrong. But if a father is doing his job, there will be times when he will say no, and there will be times when he will give out discipline, and the kids are not going to like it. And they're not going to like him, at least for a little while. They're going to be mad at him probably about that. But Paul is not talking about those occasional times when kids get upset about having to be told no or about being disciplined in some way by a parent. What Paul is talking about is creating in a child an anger and a resentment that's just always there and never goes away. You understand what he's, do not provoke your children wrath. He's not talking about those moments that come up where they're just this bang, bang, bang going on and then there's some conflict. But he's talking about that seething, boiling, burning thing that just stays and poisons the relationship between a father and a child. How could a father provoke his son or daughter to anger, that kind of anger, the continuing kind? Well, it could be a father who always says no. It could be a father whose punishments were just way over the top, too much for the crime. It could be a father who just never please him. I mean, no matter how good you do and how hard you try, you could just never get dad to say, yeah, you did great. That was a wonderful job you did for me. When you have that kind of a father, I can understand why there'd be some exasperation or frustration, resentment or anger that builds up and stays. And I don't think, I've looked at the families here, I've thought about the people here. I don't see that as a big problem. But I do want to say this to fathers. How can a father say no and not breed resentment and anger in his child? Well, here's the first thing I'll tell you. Say yes as often as you can. Some people, that answer for everything is just automatically no. I mean, your kids will tell you, some of your kids will tell you, yeah, it doesn't matter what we ask, dad always says no. What we need to do is say yes as often as we can. Be looking for reasons to say yes instead of reasons to say no. Number two, let them say all their words and you listen to them before you give your answer. That's one of the big complaints I hear from kids. Is that, before I've said about three or four words and dad's already said no. I haven't even got a chance to say what I had to say. He didn't know what I'm asking about. Listen through. Let them hear and then hear what they have to say. Give an answer. Number three, give your reasons when you can, when they would be understood. I know you can't have an understandable reason for everything that you say to a kid, but when you do have reasons that make sense, it would make sense to them, why don't you take the time and explain why you're saying what you are. And the fourth thing is that when you have to say no, sometimes you can offer an alternative that might be just as exciting or just as wonderful or just as good as the one that they can't go with or go on or whatever. You can offer an alternative. And under these circumstances, if you've made a practice of saying yes when you can and letting them get their words out and giving them reasons and alternatives, and under those circumstances, when you do have to say no, it's still unpleasant, but at least it's tolerable. It's something that we can live with. The other question is, how can a father discipline without breeding resentment and anger? And the first thing, and I think this is just kind of a thing that you keep in your mind. Think about the difference between punishment and discipline. With some people, it's about punishment. I mean, that's how they think of it. I'm going to make them sorry that they said that or that they did that. I'm going to inflict some pain here. Punishment is about inflicting pain. Discipline is about building character in a child. Two different things. Right? In a lot of ways, they may look the same, but I think you have to begin in your mind with the idea, I'm trying to do something good for this kid. I'm trying to build something in this child that they need. I'm not trying to just make them sorry. I want them to get to a positive thing here, something that's going to help them in life. So I think you begin with that in mind. Punishment is about inflicting pain. Discipline is about creating character in a child. Discipline is what we're about. How can a father discipline without breeding resentment? Well, get all the facts before you make any judgment or take any action. I've caught myself doing this before I even know what's going on. I've got people lined up and the execution squad has started. It's I've already decided who did what and I've taken care of. And I'm not entirely sure what happened. And sometimes you never can find out. But you get all the facts before you make any judgment or take any actions. Sometimes you'll find yourself doing the wrong thing. And by the way, wouldn't hurt if a parent apologized to a kid every now and then when they did the wrong thing. You know what I mean? Teaches respect. Respect for that child, and then they learn self-respect. You respect them, they respect themselves. Number three, let the punishment fit the crime. Let the punishment fit the crime. Sometimes we go overboard, and sometimes it's not enough. I mean, it's just a joke. And I think sometimes you've got to think about what it is that has happened here. And who is this child? Not every child gets, relates the same way. Not every child operates the same way. And so you try to make the punishment fit the crime and fit the child. And if you really want to confuse your kids, this is something you can do to them besides ask them what time that they're going to actually start doing cleaning their room or whatever. Next time they get in trouble, ask them what they think they should be done. Ask them, well, what do you think I should do? And let them tell you what they think. Now, you might not be able to go with that, okay? But I think there's something valuable about giving them some input in what's about to happen. And if it's good, you might find out they're harder on themselves than you are. And you might have to back up a little bit. I don't know. But let the punishment fit the crime. Ask them what they think should be done. And number four, avoid situations that embarrass or humiliate them. It's one thing to discipline a child. It's another thing to do it out in the middle of the aisle at Walmart or at Kroger's or up at the school or in front of a bunch of their peers or their friends. I think that's a mistake. And so how can a father discipline without breeding resentment or anger? And I think these are some things that need to be kept in mind. But then he goes on to say, chapter 6 and verse 4, he says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Y'all know what discipline and instruction is. I don't have to explain that, I don't think. I want to come back to something that we were talking about a few moments ago. Why is it it's just the fathers? God commands children to obey both of their parents. You can see that in the very first verse. Children, obey your parents. Both mom and dad are involved in every aspect of child rearing. No question about that. But the reason that God zeroes in on the fathers in chapter 6 and verse 4 is that he's giving some ultimate responsibility here. The ultimate responsibility for what happens with children is placed by God upon the father. I think that's all that's happening here. He is... You can back up in chapter 5 where the husband is the head of his wife. And the husband and wife together are the head of their children. But you can see in that home, the ultimate head authority is the father. Sometimes men think of being head of the family kind of like, well, go get my pipe and slippers and paper, and I'll be ordering you guys around this evening, and you'll do what I tell you to do. That's not exactly what I'm getting from this. When a man is the head of his family, it's more about responsibility than it is about privilege or power. And what I mean is, if there is something wrong in your house, in your family, in your marriage, guess who gets to fix it? That's what it means to be the head of something. When something's wrong, you get to fix it. You're the one responsible to make sure it gets fixed. And you can't sit back and wait for everyone else to decide, well, it's, come and ask me. You're the one supposed to be taking the initiative to get it fixed. Not waiting around for everyone else to start complaining, but to understand there's something wrong here and it needs to be fixed. And if something important needs to be happening in your house and it's not happening, you're the one that gets to make sure that it happens. And so when God comes to the issue of discipline and instruction of children, he says ultimately it's with the father. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So you can pray with them, and you can read with them, and you can bring them to church, and you can love them and care them and support them and correct them and pour your life into them, and all that would be part and parcel of discipline and instruction in the Lord. But let me just simplify it for you like this. The first thing and most important thing you need to do is love the Lord sincerely and openly. There's no amount of words or teaching or prayers or going to church or whatever that will compensate for hypocrisy or insincerity. And kids will figure you out over time. There's nothing that will compensate for a lack of sincerity or a lack of genuine love for the Lord. The discipline and instruction of the Lord is more likely to be caught than it is to be taught. So the first thing is this: love the Lord sincerely and openly. And the second thing that you must do, just to simplify it, is love their mother. Ira North, who was the minister at the Madison Church of Christ in Madison, Tennessee. This was a huge congregation. But he used to say, he said, the two most important things that a man can do for his kids, he says, love the Lord and love their mother. And I think he's right. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. If there is someone here this morning that's not a child of God, we're going to sing our hymn of invitation, inviting you to come to confess your faith in Jesus Christ and be baptized in his name and become a child of God. And maybe there's a Christian here who needs to just say some things to the church. Maybe it has something to do with our lesson. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe just something going on in your life and you need the prayers of the church. You need to say, I'm sorry and I've been wrong. Please pray for me and help me. And if that's your need, when we sing this hymn, it's for you too. Let's stand and sing. If you need to respond.